Hello, and welcome back to the While We're Waiting Hope After Child Loss podcast. I'm Jill Sullivan, your host and one of the co-founders of the While We're Waiting ministry. I appreciate you joining me again this week. I want to say a quick thank you to those of you who have left ratings and reviews over the last few weeks. It lets me know you appreciate the content, and even more importantly, ratings and reviews help raise our profile in the search engines, and that helps others find the podcast. So we appreciate it when you take the time to do that. I'm so pleased to bring you a conversation today with my friend Daphne Greer. We met back in the spring of 2018 when we hosted our first While We're Waiting weekend in Oregon. She is the author of the book, Barely Breathing, 10 Secrets to Surviving the Loss of Your Child, which comes from her experience of losing her 5-year-old daughter Lydia in 2008. Today's episode includes just the first half of our conversation, where Daphne shares what happened that day, and we talk about the first 4 survival secrets from her book. I think you'll be blessed by listening in. Hi, Daphne. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to you coming on. I always like to get started by giving my guests an opportunity to tell a little bit about themselves. Tell us where you're from and what life is like for you there.
Okay. I'm kind of currently in the middle of transition moving. So I'm from a little ranching town in southeastern Oregon called Lakeview, but I also am kind of part-time in Salem, Oregon. So I split my time between there at the moment, training for my job and just kind of back and forth. So I get the best of city life and country life, which is the perfect combination for me. Yeah, I really enjoy it. And I have 4 kids and they're keeping me busy for the most part. Life is always busy, never a dull moment. So my kids are 16, 12, 11, and 9.
Wow. You've got them spread out very nicely.
Yes, they are sure fun. So.
Yeah, just all the right ages to keep you busy at multiple different levels.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Good for you. Now, you do have one other little girl named Lydia. Tell us about Lydia. Help us get to know her a little bit.
Lydia was my firstborn child. She was born on November 27th, 2002. And she was a vibrant, explosive little personality from day one. She was like a born leader. She loved the spotlight, had to have all the attention. She was Miss Personality and lit up a room everywhere she was. She made everybody know that she was there. Makes me overcome with emotion just thinking about her. She was like the light of my life. Made me be a mom for the first time, being exposed to that enormous amount of love that you've never experienced before. She was just such a delight. She loved to sing and dance and perform for others, which was like a nightly thing with her pink microphone, putting on performances for family members and friends. And she didn't really like the country life, which is kind of ironic because the rest of us really do. She was very city oriented. She loved shopping and going out to art places. She was very creative. She loved making things. It was concerts and malls and I don't know. She's just a great, fun personality. Artwork was her main thing. She was very creative. And it's interesting because none of my other kids have that creative side. She loved to create. She left artwork all over the house. Even after she passed, I found all kinds of neat little treasures that she had created. Very spunky and vibrant and just, I guess people just loved to be around her. And she just, I don't know, she was just such a delight and wonderful little girl that made friends everywhere she went. She loved going to church with me. She loved getting dressed up in dresses. And the older people in our church, the older ladies would just like attract to her. They were like magnets to her and she just loved them to pieces. And it was such a sweet thing to see. And another thing about her, she was kind of an old soul. She had all this wisdom and questions about, you know, life from her great grandparents, and lots of questions about God and heaven. She was really into that spiritual side too, which I think, which helped me also, after she passed away, but she was deep for a little 5-year old. Yeah. She was very dynamic and complex and just had so many amazing qualities about her. She was an amazing little girl.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of her and she just has always just the sweetest expression on her face.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she did. And she always smiled and laughed and she was happy, very happy and confident in herself.
Yeah. Kind of, it sounds like she's kind of a classic firstborn child.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, she was definitely.
Yeah. So let's go back to the summer of 2008. Talk about what happened in your family at that time.
Summer of 2008, I was commuting to work. I commuted about 30 miles one way to work every day. And Lydia and her younger brother, Hunter, he was 3. They would go to a preschool up near my work. So I would take him there every day. Yeah. And it was July 16th when I think it was a Wednesday morning. We got up, got moving, and of course we were always running late. So
typical family with preschool
children.
It
is. Yes, trying to get them up and moving and dressed and breakfast and just the usual chaos. But she was unusually calm that morning. Got up, was eating cereal at the counter in the kitchen, and we all got dressed, and I got the kids in the car, you know. Get in, buckle up. We got to go. And we did. And it was interesting. We got to the end of our little street in our neighborhood. I got to the stop sign and she was like, "Mom, turn around. I didn't get to tell Dad I loved him." And I was like, "Lydia, come on. We're late." You know?
Yeah.
I got to get to work. I got an appointment. I got a meeting with a client. She's like, "No, turn around, turn around." So I was like, "Okay, all right." I did, you know, I'm like, "Okay." So I turned around, we pulled back in the driveway, her dad came out, and she got out of the car and gave him a hug and said, "I love you." And we got back in the car and we got on our way, you know, not thinking anything of it. And we got about 15 miles down the highway and we got into a car accident. And it was awful. I don't really need to go into details about all that, but it was terrible. And, Lydia did not survive that. And it felt like a dream. You know, it still feels like a dream when I go back there. I've blocked it out pretty good. But I can go back there in a second if I choose to, or if, you know, I need to. And, you know, and it was just a horrific moment. And Lydia, Hunter, it was in the back seat with Lydia. And, after the car stopped, he was screaming. He was a 3-year-old. And Lydia was, you know, unresponsive in the back seat. So I couldn't get out my door cause it was broken and caved in and I had to climb out the passenger side and get my son out of the back seat and held him, consoled him. I checked on her. I was trying to hold him and try to help her. And it, you know how that is. But regardless, help came. There was other people there and Lydia was flown to Portland. They brought a helicopter and flew her to Portland and she had passed away in the helicopter on the way. And, I didn't know that. I was taken to a different hospital in the ambulance. My son was taken separately also. And I got to where I was going, still kind of definitely in shock, not knowing what had happened. I remember I kept asking the staff at the hospital and the nurses, you know, "Where's my daughter? How, I want to see her. I need to talk, you know, how is she?" You know, all of that questions, it seemed like for hours.
Yeah.
And they would say, "We're going to call, we're going to check and we're going to let you know," you know, and they were very kind. And as were the chaplains they brought in at the hospital just to sit with me. And I, you know, at that time, you don't really piece all that together. And then my husband at the time was on his way to work, and he got the call and ended up going to Portland to be with Lydia. And so he later showed up at the hospital where I was, and he came in and told me the news that she didn't make it. And yeah, it was really hard. I, you know, you just don't believe it.
Your story is so different from mine in that, you know, we had time to prepare for Hannah's death, with her being diagnosed with cancer and kind of going through that journey. It's always so hard for me to imagine when I talk to someone like you, everything being completely fine and normal. You're on your way to work. It's a regular day. And then everything changes in a heartbeat. That's so hard for me to imagine.
Right. As it's hard for me to imagine you, you know, and your circumstance, you know, that would just be devastating as well. It's like you.
Right. Yeah. There is no good way. That's for sure. I also, it's hard to imagine as a mom too, being taken to one hospital and then your children are going to different places and not knowing what was happening and what a helpless feeling that had to be in that moment.
It was very helpless. And I just remember laying in the emergency room by myself. And then I had, luckily, tons of my coworkers showed up and surrounded me and stayed in that room with me for quite a while, and which was great. And I didn't understand. I thought, oh, well, heck, we'll get out of here. Life is going to be fine. You know, No big deal. I had a broken elbow and my arm was really messed up, my upper arm and my head a little bit. But other than that, I was okay. And my 3-year-old son was okay. Not a mark on him, a little scratch, I think, but not a mark on him. But I think what really, I guess, got me, or just really, I still really remember this moment. Like, my husband was there, I mean, broke me the news. We screamed and sobbed. It was just, you know, you hear screams from your own body you've never imagined before. And it was it was awful. And then they had to, you know, cut my clothes off of me and gave me this gray sweatsuit to wear out and a wheelchair and had me on all this medication. And I remember being wheeled out. It was like hours later, like 10 or 12 hours later. And the whole entire lobby of that emergency room department was packed with people I knew, my friends and coworkers, and, you know, people came from other towns, and it was just like, what is happening? Yeah, I still didn't get it, but it was definitely a moment you never forget.
Yeah. So when you left the hospital, then you're faced with having to make decisions that you know, that I know you never anticipated ever having to make. Planning a funeral, choosing a funeral home, going through all of that.
Yeah.
How did you deal with all of that?
Oh, golly. One thing that I can say was the best thing was the amazing chaplains at the hospital. There's an organization here in Salem called Crisis Chaplaincy Services, and they are amazing. We had worked with them a little bit before with our work through law enforcement, my husband and I. So we kind of knew about them and knew some of them, but they were there at that moment and stayed with us for, you know, a week nonstop. They told us before we left the hospital that day, we had to take my son in another room and tell him what happened. And that was that was very hard. So, they helped us along the way, you know. So that was I don't think I could have done it without them. And they stayed with us for about a week and helped us, you know, in those steps, planning the funeral, the celebration of life, the burial. And it was, you know, kind of it was difficult. You know, we kind of disagreed, my husband and I, on what are we going to do? Like, where are we going to bury her? What, how do you even process that?
Right. Decisions you never think you're going to have to make for your 5-year-old child.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, so we didn't get along. We didn't, we just hadn't sunk in. We're like, I don't know. He wanted her up in the Salem area. I wanted her down in Lakeview, where all my, you know, family has been, in an old cemetery. anyway, we decided on burying her in Lakeview. And, you know, then it was going to the funeral home, picking out that casket. It was just, I still feel like I was in a fog and it wasn't real.
Sure.
But we got her a hot pink one because that was her favorite color.
Perfect for her
and
personality.
And I didn't even know they... Yes, it was. And I, you know, I just asked him, do you have hot pink? Like that was the only thing that I could think of. And
sure.
Anyway, you do the best you can do at the time.
Exactly.
And I remember that's all you can do. And I remember when they had to transport her body back from Portland, OHSU, down to, we were in Independence, Oregon, which is right outside Salem. And since we both worked in law enforcement, they gave her a big law enforcement processional for the, you know, 50 miles down the freeway into Independence, you know, with the police cars and the lights. And that was when I saw them coming into the funeral home. That was really hard to see.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was amazing. It was like, wow. Like, yeah. This is real.
The wonderful thing that they wanted to honor her in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. They wanted to honor her. Yeah. So it was pretty amazing. And then the funeral, I wanted to have it at our local church, but it wasn't quite big enough. They kept telling me we can't have it there. And I was like, well, Lydia loved the church. This is her spot and we need it here. And they're like, no, we can't have it here. So we moved it to another little, I didn't understand all that at the time, but we moved it over to
a
different church. Yes. Yes. You know, there was well over, you know, I don't know, 500 people there. It was huge. I guess. Yeah. And so we had it in a neighboring town. And it was definitely the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. I'm planning that and doing that. And, you know, it wasn't something that we did alone. We had a lot of help from friends and family that coordinated everything. So,
That's a huge blessing.
Yeah.
A huge blessing.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just got to lean on those other people. to help you get through that. But
right. Well, and I know that you have authored or co-authored several books now. What prompted you to begin writing?
Well, I've always kind of loved to write and took a lot of writing classes in college, off and on, and it was something I just kind of put to the side. And then, you know, after Lydia passed away, my mind was crazy. my thoughts were everywhere. And it was like, you know, I had a lot of anxiety. I didn't know how to process anything. And I was in counseling and my counselor has suggested, why don't you try writing letters to her? And that's what started it, was journaling and writing letters to her. So that became an avenue to put all my feelings and thoughts on paper, you know, kind of releasing some stress. But also, you know, seeing and reading what was coming out of me, feeling it. Yeah. And there were just so many things I didn't want to forget, you know, dreams that I had had. And it just kind of became a daily thing, for a couple of years. And then after the journaling, you know, I kind of branched out, like I really enjoyed writing and I wanted to share. I wanted to, you know, share my experience. I wanted to help other people and, you know, try to find those glimmers of hope that are buried beneath. And it just kind of transpired over the years into, you know, blogs and different books and connections with other people. And that's kind of what happened. And it's still going. I haven't written in a while.
Sure.
It's been a year or two, but it's,
right.
Life got busy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That happens when you've got four kids that are growing up rapidly.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So for our chat today, I really want to focus in on your book that you called Barely Breathing, 10 Secrets to Surviving the Loss of Your Child. In the introduction, you acknowledge that there is no like manual for grieving. There's no Grief for Dummies or Cliff Notes for Surviving Grief. And that is very true. I think we all wish there was, but there's not.
Right? Yeah.
But you've put together 10 secrets for survival that have been helpful in your life as you've walked this road of grief. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to touch on each one of those secrets in our conversation today. So we're just going to kind of go through chapter Absolutely. By chapter or secret okay. by secret. So your very first secret is just simply breathe. And I assume that's where the book's title, Barely Breathing, yes. comes from. So yes. talk about what prompted you to write about something as apparently simple as breathing.
Yeah, well, you know, you think breathing is simple. Like we do it every day and don't even think twice about it. Most of us.
Right.
But it became something that was very hard for me in the early days. And I was short of breath. I was exhausted. I just felt heaviness on me. And
yes.
I couldn't even get off the couch. I couldn't. It was just, you know, all that weight and stress and shock. And I kept, when I wrote this book, I was, you know, that was the first thing that came to mind is like, oh my gosh, when your child dies, you are barely breathing. Like it's unfathomable. You right. just, it's unbelievable. Like you just, you can't function, some of us. And it's so hard on your body physically and emotionally. And for me, I, you know, wasn't really paying attention to my physical body. I couldn't even take care of myself right. for several days. As time went on, you know, I learned to recognize that heaviness, that shortness of breath, you know, to be anxiety and panicky and, you know, all these things that you've never experienced before, you know, just right. kind of overcame me. I think it had been a couple weeks, probably 3 weeks after I had went to the doctor because I was like, something's wrong with me. I can't breathe. You know, like yeah. this, I really thought something physically, like I had some ailment and the doctor was like, sure. no, it's anxiety and stress. This is what it is. So that yeah. was kind of eye-opening to me because I had never felt that really before. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn to focus on my breathing, to really pay attention and learn how to breathe, I guess, correctly. You know, inhale through your nose, exhale through your mouth very slowly, you know, counting, calming techniques to try to keep myself at that lower level so I don't get anxious and panicky. And, you know, that's something yeah. I still do to this day, you know, sure. 13 years later, you know, not as frequent, obviously, right. but right. it's something that you kind of got to retrain yourself to do, because you got to release that anxiety and emotions, and calm your soul. So it definitely is, yeah. is a huge secret. Probably not a secret, but a tool in managing after yeah. your child yeah. passes away.
Absolutely. Yeah. Grief has such a profound impact on you physically. I had no idea. And I remember feeling that kind of like I couldn't inhale a full breath because of the weight of the yeah. grief. It was just so heavy. So I can certainly relate to that first chapter myself. So secret number two is connect with others. And we know that grief can make you feel very isolated. So talk about the importance of making connections with others.
I know for me, when Lydia passed away, it was the most lonely, isolating feeling I have ever felt. I didn't know anybody whose child had passed away. I didn't grasp that. And I had nobody to go to talk to about that. I used to be one of those people that just kind of kept everything to herself and didn't really, you know, reach out at all for help. Sure. And it didn't take me very long, just a few days to know that, you know, I couldn't do this by myself. This was bigger than me. So I knew, I had to reach out and try to find people to connect with. And I did. The chaplain had given us, you know, some brochures for Compassionate Friends, these groups, support groups for child loss. And my husband and I attended a meeting. I'm guessing it must have been about 3 weeks after. And
yeah, that's early.
It was early, but I was like, it was early and I didn't want to go. I was like, nope, I'm not going. And I hated it. Honestly, the first meeting, it was awful. It was scary, I think, to me that I was even in a place like that. And I felt like I didn't belong. I felt like it wasn't real. Going around the room and talking about why you're there, it was very foreign and scary. And I listened to other people's stories and I just sat there with my head down and cried to myself. I couldn't even look up, couldn't talk. And after that, I was like, well, I'm not ever going back there. And then, you know, slowly, you know, it started to sink in to me that these people, I mean, no matter how uncomfortable I was, they understood like the pain and the loneliness and the guilt, just all of it. They understood those crazy, overwhelming feelings that nobody else could. Like, you know, my best friend or, you know, a coworker, they try their best to console you, you know, but a lot of them don't know how. And if you've never experienced that, it's a whole different level. Right. So yeah, connecting with others was huge. And, you know, as time went on, we became regular members of Compassionate Friends. We became members of the steering committee. We helped hold fundraisers and put on programs and were very involved in that. And looking back now, that was a very healing thing for me. And I know it's not for everybody, but it did work for me. Just having that understanding from other people who could relate and who got it. They knew what it was like. It was also scary listening to some of them who had lost their children, you know, 15 years earlier. That really scared me when I was new in this. I thought, these people are still here talking about it. What, you know, is there no hope? I couldn't process it all. And, but you know, in time, you get different perspective and it changes and you learn to reach out and comfort those that are coming in new on this journey, you know, and you remember you were there and what it's like, and it all comes back to you. And then you remember, this is why I'm here. And I think just, you know, connecting with others is huge. And now it's pretty amazing with, you know, social media and all these connections we can have online and groups. And like while we're waiting, you know, we can find all these great supports for us. Right. So that I think are essential.
Right. Yeah. Like in our while we're waiting support groups, we sometimes have people come that are very early, like that 3 weeks, 6 weeks. And they come in and they're just so broken. But the people that have been coming for a long time that are farther down the journey just take them under their wings and just love on them. And then we have the joy of seeing as the years go by that those people who came in so broken at 6 weeks, they're the ones who are reaching out and just embracing the new folks that come in. And so that's just a real blessing to see. So
it absolutely is.
Yeah. So secret three is to journal. I know that writing a blog was really helpful to me in those early years after Hannah went to heaven. And so that was kind of my journaling. You've already talked a little bit about writing and how helpful that was for you. Did you have anything to add to that?
No, not really. I mean, I just think I would encourage anybody, even if you're not a writer, you know, write down your feelings, your thoughts. It started for me also writing down things of Lydia I didn't want to forget, like the cute little freckles on her nose or how she, it's kind of funny and kind of gross, but she would like pick her nose all the time and wipe it on her headboard and above her wall, and all these little, it was so funny. And just all her little quirks, silly things that she would do. I was really afraid of forgetting her and forgetting all those wonderful qualities about her. So I started writing all that down, and dreams, you know, and and things that her brother would say about her. You know, all those tiny little things that I didn't want to lose.
Right.
Because, you know, looking back now, that, you know, they're priceless, and I'm glad I did. I didn't write down everything, of course, but, you know, you do what you can do, and it definitely adds to the healing element.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Yeah, we think there's things that we're going to remember forever, but we don't if we don't write them down. So
right.
I think that's a good recommendation. So secret four in your book is to give it to God. How did Lydia's homegoing impact your faith, and how did you work through that?
Yeah, that was just, you know, when something like your child's death happens, you naturally, I think, question everything. Like, why me? Why us? You know, we were good people. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're good or bad, but tragedies happen. And
right.
My life, thankfully, had been tragedy free. I had never experienced any, you know, any bad thing like that.
Yeah.
So it was very foreign and I didn't understand. And, you know, I think we all say, why God? Why? Like, this is bigger than me. I can't handle this. I'm not equipped for this. And I knew immediately that I wasn't going to be okay if I couldn't rely on God. I had grown up, you know, as a child, in the church and having those seeds of faith, which I think, you know, is essential for me. You know, a lot of people don't have that. But I think it makes you experience such devastation and loss, makes you question everything, life, death, what happens after we die. And I kind of went overboard and started scouring every book I could find about all of that kind of stuff, about God and faith and why these
sure.
things happen. And I wanted answers. And what is heaven like? I had to try to comfort myself in, you know, any way I could, and try to make sense of what didn't make sense. And I often thought God was punishing me. You know, I did something bad and this was part of my punishment. You know, your mind just kind of goes, you know, very irrational,
yeah.
but it
yeah.
makes sense at the time. You know, and I ended up diving in, and, you know, I wanted to find hope, and there was nobody could give me
yeah.
hope. Nobody, like nobody mm-hmm. in my, I guess, circle was, you know, it was like awful. I'm so sorry. That's what everybody would say. But there was really no, hey, you know, there's hope.
Yeah.
And looking back, you know, that's kind of odd. Like nobody really could offer me that. And
yeah.
I had to find it for myself. And so I dove straight in, and I, you know, immersed myself with the Bible and God and, you know, other people's books, that had went through this and faith. And I, you know, and I began to understand that, you know, there was a heaven, there was God, God was good. You know, there was there, no matter how hard it was to imagine, there was going to be some silver lining in this eventually. You know, there was a purpose, there's mm-hmm. something good will happen. And knowing that, you know, heaven is amazing and I was going to be reunited with her again. And
yeah,
this is just temporary. You know, we're here mm-hmm. for a temporary short while. And, you know, and all those things, it was this longing that only God could comfort me also.
Yes.
You know,
right.
It was, you know, no matter who I had around me, it was like, God was the only one. Like, you know, I had to cling to all these promises
yes.
and hope. And, you know, I didn't have anything to lose. And this is what I had to do. And it really made a difference. And I got to know the Lord better. I learned a lot. My perspective changed over time, and my,
sure.
you know, my faith just kind of transformed, and it increased, and it got stronger. And, I realized that, you know, God has a plan, and he's going to be there for us along the way, no matter how difficult it gets. And it's our job to trust. And keeping that faith is essential. And I think showing others, and, you know, showing others that we have that strong faith and encouraging them and offering those little glimmers of sunshine and hope to others, you know, is what this is all about.
Yeah. I like what you said about how even when you were with other people, people that loved you and all of that, they still couldn't really comfort you like the Lord can. And I think that's so true. He's the only source of true comfort. Other people can try, but you know, the Holy Spirit is the comforter. That's what the Bible calls him. So
absolutely. Everything
else that we turn to is going to come up short.
Yes.
So
very true.
That concludes the first half of my conversation with Daphne Greer. I hope you'll come back next week for the second half of our discussion, when we'll talk about the remainder of the survival secrets in her book, including dealing with guilt, honoring our child's memory, and cultivating gratitude. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to sharing the rest of our chat with you next Wednesday.